Blog Talk Radio.
Danny Griffin here, and for the next hour, I'll be your host on the Juror 13 show on Blog Talk Radio. And we have three guests tonight who I'm really looking forward to talking with. And the focus of this evening's program is going to be on the children under siege aspect and the crimes, the recent apparent rash of crimes against young children, specifically girls. And they include the Sandra Cantu case, the Haley Cummings case, and the Kaylee Anthony case. And we'll also be talking some about the media. And a topic that I've been interested in over the years, but just over the last couple of days has come back to my attention about the presumption of innocence and what role the media plays regarding the presumption of innocence. And what is expected of us if we are not potential jurors and are not involved in the proceedings against the defendant. So we'll be talking about that stuff. And first, let me introduce our guests. I have with me on the line Simon and Jan Barrett. And Simon and Jan are editors for Blogger News Network, a news and review site. And they have been reporting on the Kaylee Anthony case from the beginning, and also the Haley Cummings case. And I might say they have some pretty strong opinions about the cases and the people involved. Simon and Jan, welcome to Blog Talk Radio Juror 13 show.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you, Danny.
You're welcome. Glad you could make it with us. And also on the line is TJ Hart. TJ is the Director of News Programming and Online News at NewsTalk 97.3 WSKY-FM, Gainesville, Florida. And he also does a little TV reporting for CNN, Headline News, and appears on Nancy Grace, Jane Velez Mitchell, and Prime News. And he was named one of Radio Inc.'s top radio program directors in America in 2009. TJ, welcome.
All lies. No, thank you very much, Denny. I appreciate the kind offer and having me on the show tonight.
And the we began the show, by the way, with a theme song from Juror 13, and hopefully get everybody in the mood to do a little talking about some cases. Let me, TJ, begin with you, if I could.
Sure.
And I'd like to find out if there's Haley Cummings case is faded somewhat over the past several days, at least as far as I know, out of the media spotlight. Could you tell us if anything's going on with that case or where it stands today?
Yes, there have been a lot of peripheral stories that have been floating about, but the real meat of the investigation, as far as those who are close to the scene are concerned, are the relationships between Misty Cummings and other folks in the mix in the community, because her timeline, according to even the top cops in the Putnam County area, is still inconsistent, and they're very frustrated with it. Now, what I have been doing with the team that's been assembled with the Case Closed Incorporated, and that is run by William Cobra Stobbs and his team as well, is that we've been examining four different possibilities. The young lady, Haley, the 5-year-old who's been missing since February 10th, snatched from her own home in Satsuma, Florida, has either been stolen, she's been sold, she's been killed, or some well-intended person thought they were helping the situation by getting that young girl out of what appears to be a dreadful situation and really didn't take this out to a logical conclusion, now could be facing a kidnapping rap, but had good intentions. So these are the things that we're examining right now, but what seems to be in the mix is a circle of friends, a very curious circle of friends, that seems to revolve around one Christina Renee Pravat, who was just arrested back on Monday, April 20th, in Putnam County on cocaine charges. She was also arrested with Amber Brooks. Now, she plays a role in this as well. And first of all, Ms. Pravat was the chauffeur and the matchmaker for Misty Cummings the weekend before Haley was missing from her home, before she was snatched. And now she made an arrangement for her to meet up with a young man by the name of Greg Page, a local man. And the two had a sex and drug encounter for a couple of days. And the next day, the 10th, that's when the little girl was missing from her home. Also in this mix is Amber Brooks. Who is she? Well, Amber Brooks is a woman who had a child by Ronald Cummings Sr. That is Haley's father. And now Misty and Ronald Sr. are husband and wife. Amber Brooks is a 21-month-old disabled son, and there's been some bad blood that ever since, you know, Misty and Ronald started seeing each other, and then when they got married. The bad blood had occurred back in the fall of 08 when it appears that Misty was running her mouth and saying some very unkind things about Amber Brooks, kind of a little catty, taunting about, "I got your man," to this degree. It turns out that Amber Brooks' mother, Lisa Ann Brooks, age 37, battered Misty Cummings. She was arrested a week or two later on the charge of battery. It came to trial. Misty never showed up. Things were pretty much dropped and let go at that point. And it was simple battery, basically a lot of slapping going on. But there have been some taunts, allegedly, on the MySpace page on Amber Brooks. Now, we have these people who are kind of floating in circles, and there's a lot of drug and prostitution going on in these circles, friends, and a lot of sexual hookups, and a lot of jealousy, and a lot of bad blood, and a lot of animosity, and a toxic mix. And one can only fathom what could have happened, may have been, to steal that little girl. And police right now to this day will say that whoever snatched her was not a stranger. And that's where we are right now, as we try to peel back a very nasty onion that's enough to make anybody's eyes water, as we try to figure out all of these relationships and these associations. It's very prickly, and it's not pretty. It's not pretty at all.
TJ, before I move on to Simon and Jan, could you just, for anybody who's not familiar with Cobra, could you kind of give us a little background on who Cobra is and what he does?
Yes, Cobra is William Cobra Stobbs. Now, he is a bondsman and a surety agent who is licensed in the state of Florida. Now, a bounty hunter is something that he just kind of got tagged along because you can't have a bounty hunter to his credit. And, you know, he usually makes his money hunting down wanted suspects and fugitives. Well, this is a personal investigation, or private investigation, that he's doing pro bono. Got to tell you, he's running out of funds, too, and it's not pretty. He's the guy who's been turning up all of the information. In fact, right now, in this mix of Pravat and all of these characters, Pravat was taken back to jail on a revocation of bond just yesterday. In fact, it was all over HLN's Jane Velez Mitchell tonight, the videotape of that. She was taken from a house of questionable repute, let's just say, and she was taken in for a bond revocation, a flight risk, and she had either had conversations or text messages contemplating suicide. So it was also for her own good. She was placed on 72-hour suicide watch as well. There has been a man who's been trying to bond her out and trying very, very hard. This man we've discovered, and I'm not going to release his name until I have him proper middle initial identified, but this man is a sexual offender. This man is about 46 years old, and he's a sex offender. And we're going to find out who this man is and what his business is with Ms. Pravat. And I think we might be getting just a whole lot closer. Back to Cobra. What he has been doing is been conducting his own investigation. He is friends with Crystal Sheffield, the biological mother of Haley Cummings, attorney. But they are not working with each other whatsoever. There's no money changing hands, not a whole lot of information either from what I'm hearing. But Stobbs is basically running this investigation on his own because he cares. For some reason, he was just drawn to this case, and that's where his heart is. He's the guy who's really kicking up the dust and really uncovering some stones, and I think it would be a cry and shame if if outside investigators had this solved before the people who are paid to serve and protect do. But I get the feeling he's going to be the one who solves this. He's also from Brevard County, and he's also recognized by the Police Benevolent Society down there in Brevard County as well. And he represents a lot of police officers when they get in tight situations, and he's very well respected in the South Florida area.
Boy, this is quite a case. TJ, thanks a million. We'll get back to that in a few minutes. I want to move over to Simon and Jan, if I could. Simon, you've been following, well, the both of these cases, actually, the Anthony case and the Cummings case, on your Sunday afternoon show on Blog Talk Radio, haven't you?
Yes, indeed. Yep, we have been following it since day one.
And what is your take on the status of the Anthony case? Now, there was a story, or a rumor anyway, today that there might be another document dump on the of evidence in the case, and a rumor that maybe there would be some type of smoking gun evidence regarding a surveillance photo or video of when Casey ditched the car at the check cashing parking lot.
The Amscot.
Amscot. That apparently didn't happen, at least the document dump, as far as I know.
It apparently hasn't come out yet, because unless it has it, I've missed it, because I haven't heard anything about it being released yet. I just heard, like you say, a rumor that they were going to. So.
And have you heard the same rumor about the surveillance photography?
Yes. The problem I have is that I do not see a smoking gun
coming out at all, you mean?
Yeah, there's no smoking gun in that evidence.
Unfortunately, I tend to agree with you, because I almost think if there was a smoking gun, we'd have heard about it by now, for one thing.
Right.
And I know rumors start and they get carried away with them, and they oftentimes don't materialize.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to talk it up, but no, I don't see any smoking gun coming out of the next document dump. The surveillance video might be fun to watch. You know, we'll see her drive the car, get out of the car, and walk away. But I don't think you're going to see anything that...
I don't see really what it could show that would be any help or any major breakthrough with the case or anything like that. I don't understand why it's that important, other than to say when she dropped the car off there, or what she did with it, or whatever.
Right. It may be important timeline wise.
Right. That would be about the only way to me that it would be, unless she did something like in the trunk of the car at the time, or maybe transferred something from the trunk or something, but I don't think she would do that. It take risk in having a surveillance camera anywhere around.
Would you folks correct my memory? I think there was one story early on here that the reason that car was at the Amscot parking area was because it had run out of gas, and she had some people push her into the lot. Am I right on that or no?
Now, that's what she claimed, said that she had run out of gas, and that's why it was left there. But
so,
then, I mean, you wouldn't look at it different ways, but then she had, whenever, was it Tony picked her up, or whoever picked her up later, she told him that her dad was going to have the car fixed. So, I mean, that can be, I don't believe anything that she says anyway, but...
I can't understand that.
Yeah.
I just got a question for through my chat room that I'll direct to TJ. TJ, one of the listeners in the chat room wanted to know if there's somewhere to donate toward the search for Haley Cummings. Is there a fund, a legitimate fund, or something set up?
There are all kinds of funds, you know, to the separate families. If they were talking about perhaps supporting Mr. Stubbs to keep his investigation going, I do have that information. You can contribute to any SunTrust Bank contact them, let them know you wish to make a contribution to the account of Case Closed Incorporated, or INC, William Staubs, S-T-A-U-B-S. And they will make sure that they can get that taken care of, and they would place that in there. I think he's got enough jingle to stay here probably about Friday, Saturday, and maybe Sunday. After that, it's looking pretty bleak.
Okay, so if anybody is inclined to want to contribute, there's the information. And apparently, there's an influx of some revenue needed very quickly, or this thing could fold up. And TJ believes that that Cobra is the chief, not law enforcement, but doing the chief investigative job at the moment, and has the best chance of perhaps bringing this thing to some kind of conclusion. So if you're inclined to want to make a donation, that probably is a good place to do it. And we'll give that information out again once more before the end of the show. Jan.
Yeah.
I read today that Baez is going to use what he calls an ugly coping defense. Are you familiar with that term?
Well, actually, no, but I did read this. I know what you're talking about.
Okay, and would you tell us what your what you think he means by that? What's
actually,
ugly coping?
I don't understand exactly what it is that he's going into, but I think he's just fishing, right? I mean, personally, I think he's just fishing, but I'm not really sure exactly what the word means because I haven't really read very much into it today because I haven't been around on my computer all day. But I do.
What he's talking about is that that the woman has some social issues and. Yeah, that's going to be part of the defense. I mean, this to me is a load of BS. or a load of JB. Jose Baez.
Okay. Means about the same thing.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't think even Jose Baez knows what he's doing. I think he's just going at anything that he can go to personally. I don't think that I think he's just trying to figure out which way to go with this that he thinks will work.
There's a million directions he can take. The problem is he is trying them all. And news is getting out. You know, Jose, you know, pick a story and stick to it. Yeah, if you don't, those jurors are going to say, nah.
let me ask you this question, Simon. I laugh a lot about some of these things we hear out of the defense camp, some of these strategies. Now, there's this one from a couple of days ago, and I didn't hear this personally, but I heard it through other people, that Baez said the dead body smell in the trunk of the car was actually a potato that had gone bad or something. And I chuckle quite a bit because it seems so ridiculous to me. But
totally.
Does any of this stuff have a chance of working? I mean, is there a possibility that 1 out of 12 people in that jury box could actually say, yeah, maybe it was a dead squirrel or a rotten potato or a rotting pizza?
Actually, it was... It was two dead squirrels that
crawled up.
Right. You know what? I think would be better would be for the listeners to call in and tell us what they think about this dead squirrel scenario.
You know, though, Danny, the answer to that question is... I think that there is a possibility that there would be one person in this world. I mean, if you look around right now and you look and see, there's actually people sending money to this girl while she sits behind those bars and does nothing for this money. And they actually are sending it to her. And so there is some people in the world that would believe her. And they would say, well, this is just a... This is a good plot or something, they could think, well, yeah, I guess it could be possible. But I guarantee you, it's somebody that's never smelled death before or anything close to it. Because, I mean, how can you compare the smell of a dead body to a rotten potato? I mean, you'd really have to be naive to think it or even to accept that. But, yeah, I do believe that there is somebody, but I don't think it'll be enough.
I don't think you can find 12 of them.
No, I don't think it would be enough to say that she's innocent. I think that they could say that it would be possible, but I don't think it would be probable.
I have a question.
They would follow it.
Go ahead.
I have a question for the panel. And the question is, do you think with all the publicity that has been carried on cable television, on all of the newspapers, the tabloids, virtually every website that reports news in America, do you think the woman can get a fair trial?
Great question. I'm pretty certain Denny wanted to ask it.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that tonight because that's been bugging me. And can you hold on just a second before we answer that? We have a caller on the line, and we'll see what the caller wants to know. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Hi. Yeah, I was just asking if it was other people besides Cindy and George who has experience in law enforcement and nursing that know the distinct smell of a decaying body, then I would understand it. But they know. They mentioned it twice. So them saying pizza and a squirrel just is not cutting it for me.
They changed their mind about the dead body after they realized what they've said. They realized that they had really said some damaging evidence against their daughter, and they had to change it then. I mean, that's, to me, that's exactly what they've done. Because, I mean, like you said, being a nurse and being an ex-law enforcement officer, they have to know. I mean, they specifically said it, and they didn't say it could have been. They said it smelled like one. So, yeah, they know. They know. Even Lee said that the smell was so bad while it was sitting in the garage. And, I mean, other people have said the same thing that was even close to the car, not even standing next to it. And they've said the same thing. They said the car still has stench to it. So, yeah, I don't see how they can get away with that, though. The smell of a rotten potato is bad, but it's nowhere near that.
And I think both George and Cindy, when they made their initial statements about the dead body smell, were very emphatic. I mean, they didn't leave much room for doubt as to how
right.
they felt.
Well, actually, a radio station in Florida did the pizza smell,
right,
left the
I
pizza
remember
in
that.
The car, and it didn't smell nothing at all. In fact, it just dried up.
Right, for so many days they did that. And that, I would believe that, because, I mean, there's just no way a pizza, no matter what kind of heat you got, a pizza
yeah,
not going to
yeah.
smell like that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We have another caller waiting. Caller from 914 area, you're on the line. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I had a question about a plea deal and if that's ever been brought up or if it would be possibly on the table for Casey Anthony and if your guests had any comments about that.
Go ahead,
well,
Simon or Jan.
As far as I know, there's no plea deal made. Never even offered, not since from the very beginning when she flat out turned it down, and that was only a partial immunity or something. I forgot how they called it. But they think it's just the Anthony's assuming, and Baez for that matter, that since they brought the death penalty back, they're accusing them of saying they've only brought the death penalty back hoping that she would accept one. But there has never been one, I mean, there has not been a plea deal offered to her to accept or turn down right now.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. We avoid the trial, and we just put the needle in right now.
Yeah, well, that would be ideal. But when do you think they would get to the point? I mean, how much taxpayer money and how much whatever money is going to be spent until they do finally offer her some kind of plea deal?
That there is no plea deal.
I don't think they're going to offer her any.
No.
I think they've got enough for it. I think they would have never put the death penalty back up if they didn't have enough where that they thought that they could get her straight out like this.
Yeah. And here's the real problem that I have, right? We're already funding the prosecution, those lovely taxpayer dollars, and Baez is now saying, oh, because the plea deals, death penalties back on the table, the government should pay for it.
Yeah.
So we're going to fund both ends of the circus.
He wants the taxpayers to pay for a large portion of it.
I mean, in my opinion, if she can't pay Baez, then put it in the hands of a public defender.
Well, that's the way it should be, if that's the case.
I just would like to, if they can't get a fair trial, or if they're going to go for that argument, you know, that's where I thought maybe the plea deal might be.
It'll surprise me. I can't say that they won't, definitely, but I really don't think that they're going to need to, as far as to be able to get a conviction.
Right.
I don't think that they'll need to.
I hope not. I really hope that this goes all the way and we can watch the trial and she's convicted and whatever happens, happens. But thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you for your call.
Okay,
and we do have open lines now. We're at, you can reach us at 646-478-0982, 646-478-0982. And TJ, before we return to your question about whether or not Casey Anthony can get a fair trial, one of the people in the chat room had a question wanting to know if Misty is in fact a suspect. Now, she claimed fairly early on, that she took a lie detector and passed it. Now, that was her declaration. Do you know where Misty stands in this thing? She's still under suspicion, I assume.
She's very much under suspicion, and in fact, that was also reported today as the very last sentence in a story written by the Palatka Daily News, which is the big newspaper in Putnam County where this all takes place, and that came from one of the top cops in the sheriff's office. Her timelines are inconsistent, and she still remains very much under suspicion. In fact, I think the word suspect was thrown out there, but I want to make sure of that, and I'll just stick with under suspicion.
So they haven't really, as last I knew, cleared anybody. Everybody was a suspect.
That's true. Yeah, they haven't cleared anyone. And where these people say, oh, it's not passed, I fail. I have no idea where the hell that's coming from because results are very much, it's not like you're taking a spelling quiz or something like this. These are all basically true, false, yes, no. And how do you react to the question test? Each individual answer is something that they're looking for, not as a sum of everything put together. And these results are sent off to Washington, D.C., to the FBI. It's not like, some local Sam is in there going, yep, you done good. That's not how it happens. And where these people are going, off saying, I passed my test. I have no idea what goes through their head. Unless somebody slapped them on the back and said, you're okay, you're fine, it's over. And they took that as, I passed. Because I'll tell you, in the South, when folks aren't getting killed, they are kind of friendly.
TJ, let me ask you this. Now, you've been reporting for several years, and you've covered, probably hundreds of cases. In your experience, how the cast of characters in the Haley Cummings case, how do they compare to other people you've dealt with or people that have been involved in other cases you've covered? Is there anything unique about them, or are they kind of average what you expect or no?
Well, there is some parallel to the Illinois State House in Springfield, Illinois.
Okay.
Because I covered politics for many years, and, going in and out of the State House in Springfield, Illinois, one feels the need to take a shower in Clorox for all the, pretty disgusting stuff that comes out of there. but you know, but there's some similar parallels because a lot of the stuff that goes on with people who wear suits and ties, as opposed to folks who wear blue jeans, is that it's all about relationships, shared behaviors, shared activities, shared motives, shared interests, and also when those relationships turn sour, how do people act and how do they react? So there are some similarities. That's actually a pretty good parallel. And the only thing that's different is the latitude and the style of clothes. But other than that, it's pretty similar.
Okay, we have another caller on the line from the 813 area code. 813, you're on the line. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a question for the whole panel. In the Anthony case, George Anthony supposedly attempted suicide. And in the Haley Cummings case, I guess the prime people involved got married. And I'd like to hear your opinions of all of those things. It seems to me that they're drawing more attention to themselves than to the needs of those poor little babies. But that's just my opinion. Is it okay if I just hang up and listen?
If you like, go right ahead. Thank you for the call and the
question. Okay, thank you.
You want to kick it off, Simon or Jan?
Let's not forget, Cindy Anthony also claims now she's tried that she thought of committing suicide also. As far as the Anthonys, I don't know. I can't say for anybody else, but my opinion on the Anthonys is that it was just a line for attention to get away from, well, actually, to take the attention away from Casey, from the case itself. I don't believe either one of them ever intended to kill themselves. And besides, like I said before about Cindy's claim now, that she claims that she had thought about it, but it doesn't make much sense that she is claiming now that she thought about it whenever she was insisting to everybody that Kaylee was still alive. Why would she want to kill herself if she didn't think, if she thought Kaylee was actually going to be home?
Oh, I have to agree with Jan. I mean, the whole thing is nonsense. I mean, George, in my opinion, never had any plans on committing suicide. But it was a great story, and it definitely took the heat off Casey for a little while. It made it look like, oh, someone's doing something terribly wrong. You know, they're doing bad things to our little Casey. Bullshit. That's what I have to say.
Okay. TJ, would you want to handle the question about the Cummings marriage, Ronald and Misty?
Well, a lot of people are still trying to figure that one out. The word from the families was, well, that's the way Haley wanted it.
Haley
and
is only 5 years old. I mean, is only 5.
That's true. And also in saying it in past tense, wow.
I know. That's true. That's very true. Why would they do it that way? And this child's only 5 years old. What does marriage mean to a five-year-old? How can they say that it was important to her to see them married and that they wanted to see she wanted to see them married? I just don't buy that one.
No, the important bit is the past tense.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
and also
I did it just now. So, but
also, what had happened too is that in a conversation at a little restaurant there in Satsuma with Stobbs, Cooper Stobbs.
Yeah.
They were going to reenact the night of the disappearance when Misty got cold feet, and that's when it was discovered about Greg Page. And Stobbs asked Ronald point blank. He says, "Why in the hell did you marry that girl?" He says, "Well, you know, with your friends you keep close. What do you do with your enemies?" He said, "Keep closer." Ronald says, according to Stobbs, I'm quoting Stobbs, and Stobbs claims that Ronald told him that Misty is the only lifeline he has to his daughter. And if she bolts, he's got no way whatsoever of ever perhaps even finding this little girl.
Wow. And speaking of which, I heard tonight that on one of the programs that the police are saying they still have hope that Haley is alive. Now, I think we've discussed and other people have discussed over the weeks since the disappearance that the longer these things go, there's a tendency for a bad outcome. And
yeah.
I don't know, you know, how much credence to put in. I suppose the fact that no body has been found naturally means that there's a chance that she's alive. Certainly if there's a body, then that's off the table. But I don't know how realistic that is. TJ, you're right there on the ground. What do you think of that theory? Is that realistic
or
no?
The top brass with Putnam County Sheriff's Office, you know, they were feeling that, you know, the worst had happened, but they have reason to believe, and they're not expounding upon that, they have reason to believe that she is still alive. Art Harris at ArtHarris.com was talking about that very point in one of his articles today about that, too, and that's something that I've said for, I don't know, the last couple of weeks. It wasn't until, well, I almost got to talk about it tonight on Jane Velez Mitchell, and sometimes they get a little squirrely when I start talking about my theories. But again, three of the four scenarios we're examining with my team is that she is still alive. Only one scenario points to her as being dead.
Well, that's very encouraging. You know, I was hoping that it wasn't just the fact they hadn't found a body yet, but there was some basis to believe that she might actually be alive. Let me take another caller here. Caller, you're on the line. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, this is Dr. Jan calling.
Hi, Doc.
Hey, I think that Tweedledee and Tweedledum got married thinking that they weren't going to have to testify against each other, not knowing that it wasn't going to matter. Caller, you're on the line. Go ahead with your question. What do you think?
That's possible. Because they wouldn't have to be, they can't force them now that they're married to testify against each other.
Ah, wrong-o.
Go ahead, Simon.
Oh, Jan's giving me the look from hell. No, the deal on that is that it happened prior to the marriage,
mm-hmm.
and they could indeed be forced to testify. But I'm sure that was the motivation.
Circle gets the square there, Simon. Whatever has been brought forth by each of those individuals prior to their marriage, that's already sworn testimony. That's already on the books.
So if the intent was to avoid having to give testimony, that didn't work out. They either were misinformed or misjudged or something, huh?
Here's the 8,000-pound gorilla in the room. I haven't seen Misty for the better part of a month. I just wonder how her health is, if there's been a change in her health.
TJ, speaking of that, I think I heard you on a program. It might have been the Mitchell Show, Jane Velez, a few days ago, commenting about the biological mother's health, that she was looking, I don't know, pretty run down.
Ooh, yeah.
Am I correct there?
Yes, she had been suffering seizures. Crystal Sheffield had been suffering seizures off and on, at least two that I know of, one behind the wheel of a car. Fortunately, her father was close by, you know, saw what was going on, got her medical attention and everything. But I think it was early Monday morning, about 1:15 a.m., she's at the Haley Bug Center. She only took a short time to go back to Baker County to rest up, but she felt compelled to be down there at the Haley Bug Center to try to get, you know, tips, phone calls, information for anybody who, you know, didn't feel comfortable going to the police with information possibly relating to her missing daughter. And in the Haley Bug Center, just a very tiny little purple building on South US 17 in Little Old Satsuma. and it's right in front of the railroad tracks, as a matter of fact. Now, she and her sister were in the center, and evidently they were startled by something, and we can't confirm what that something might have been. But anyway, that coupled with the stress, she had another seizure. She fell. She landed against a hard, sharp surface, possibly a table or an end table or a desk. She cracked her nose wide open. She also received a very big bruise and a cut on top of one of her eyes. The place was just covered in blood. It was a bloody mess. And the fact that when the EMTs got there, they saw a hatchet. They had no idea what the heck that was, and still haven't been able to figure out why that was there. But there are all kinds of things hanging around that place that because, you know, they're always trying to rearrange things, and it's not necessarily a complete building. But anyway, she was taken by ambulance, and her identity was confirmed later on by her lawyer, Kim Picazio. It was her. She did have the seizure. She did crack her nose open. She is recuperating with her family back in Baker County now. And, you know, she's, like I said, just an absolute mess. The police have no report of anything like a possible prowler or an intruder or someone trying to spook the girls, but still the stress of it all has contributed to it. Her skin, when I talked to her about a week or two ago, was kind of gray and somewhat of a yellowish tint, and the poor girl just looked run down. Just beat.
Well, that's unfortunate. I hope, you know, it's nothing that's going to get any worse. Hopefully it can be straightened out fairly easily. Let's talk about TJ's question from a few minutes ago. Can Casey Anthony get a fair trial? Simon, would you like to take first stab at that?
Oh, sure. It's a thorny question. You know, the position that we in the press take, and I'll say this, it doesn't matter if you are the New York Times or your Blogger News Network, everyone has an angle. I write with a slant. I will agree that I write with a slant. Can she get a fair trial? Yes, because the trial is about the evidence. It's not what about Simon and Jen Barrett write. It's not about what TJ Hart writes. It's about the actual facts and what 12 people in a room think. Is it fair what we do? I don't know.
Well, we state in our opinions. Everybody's entitled to opinions. And my opinion is that she's guilty.
Give her a fair trial and hang her. That's what you're saying, right, Jen?
Are there any tall oak trees?
Plenty of them.
TJ, what do you think, answering your own question? Do you think she can get a fair trial?
Yes, and then I'll give you an example of something that happened just recently. It also involved a child. It was Jessica Lunsford at the hands of John Evander Cooey, which led to the Jesse's Law. And this happened in Homosassa, Florida, a couple of years ago. Now, everybody and their brother, you couldn't find anybody who didn't want to string up John Cooey in Homosassa Springs, Citrus County, Marion County, Alachua County, in that area of Florida. Okay, now you go to Miami, you take the judge in the case, and he moves the venue to Miami. He interviews nearly 200 potential jurors. Guess what? They found 12 who really didn't know jack about this horrendous crime, about a man who sexually abused a 9-year-old girl, fed her pizza, gave her a dolphin to hold as he bound her arms and legs, put her in a plastic bag, and buried her alive behind his own trailer. Mm. There were people who absolutely had not heard that story. They found 12. They found 12, and both the defense and the prosecution was satisfied with the 12, they seated them along with the alternates. They made their presentation, and guess what? It worked. The system worked. Mr. Cooey was found guilty.
Good.
Yeah,
it can happen.
It does bring up a question, though. The concept is that it's a trial by your peers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not what's going on. This is a trial by people who know nothing. I'm not trying to diminish their intelligence or anything like that, but I mean, jury selection has become an art form.
Yeah.
Speaking of fair trials and so forth, one of the Juror 13 site founder brought to my attention a couple of days ago that this is the so-called Craigslist killer. And a site was opened on, or a page on Facebook, and there were quite a few comments on that site, and a lot of them were negative toward the media. You know, a media feeding frenzy, and that there's no way this guy can get a fair trial now because of the coverage and the slanted and biased coverage and so forth. And several of the posters cited the presumption of innocence, and that for people to go on that site or any place else, presumably, and make comments that they thought this guy was guilty or is guilty were contrary to the American system and the presumption of innocence. Now, I have a little different take on that, as did the Juror 13 founder, in that presumption of innocence applies to the system, to the process. For example, the defendant does not have to prove innocence, is presumed to be innocent. It's up to the prosecution to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The defendant does not have to testify in his or her own behalf, as we all know. And when the jurors are being selected, they can be asked by the attorneys if they have an open mind, you know, if they have not decided on guilt or innocence yet, and then those jurors that haven't can be tapped to serve. I don't believe personally that presumption of innocence precludes me from taking a look at the evidence that's available at the time and forming an opinion and expressing that opinion. And now, there are certain cases I've followed where, based on the initial evidence or the evidence as the case moves forward, I really don't know if the person is guilty or innocent. I have to see the case and follow it through. There are other cases where, in my mind, the evidence is so overwhelming that I form an opinion that the party is guilty. Or the evidence is so weak, I form an opinion that they're probably not guilty and will get off. So I guess my question is, am I somehow, or people like me who are not involved in any way, shape, or form with the trial, are not part of the jury pool or the system, are we doing something wrong? Are we depriving a defendant of their constitutional rights by forming opinions and expressing those opinions? Simon, would you care to give your answer on that first?
Oh, good Lord. How much longer does the show go on for?
Keep it under 10 minutes.
I honestly believe that you and I, it's our not only our right, but our obligation to share opinions. And you're correct that there are cases where it seems fairly clear cut. There are other cases where it's not so clear cut. But yeah, we absolutely have to share our opinions. We are the people that people read, people listen to, people watch.
Okay, Jan.
Okay, just, I don't know if this is really what you're asking me or not, but I mean, just saying, for instance, in the Anthony case. All right, the media is getting so much flack out of all this for how we report this and how, you know, what's said and what's not said. We report what we hear, what we read, what we see. Okay, but not only that, but look who comes to us with this information. I mean, not me and Simon directly, but say, for instance, CNN or the early show in New York, the Today Show, Good Morning America. Look who goes to them, like the Anthonys, for instance, for the publicity out of the case. They get it out. They tell their story. They argue with this one, argue with that one, and as long as they're saying it their way, they're fine. And as soon as they say it some way that, you know, well, okay, this doesn't add up, I think you're wrong, then they want to shoot out and say the media is destroying this case. But when they came to the media to begin with,
mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, so, no, we have the right, I think we do, I think we have the right to report what we see because the people want to hear it. I mean, it's not just because, I mean, Simon and I don't make a dime off of this, so nobody can say that what we write is to make money off of this case because we don't. But we do it because the people want to hear it. They want to know. There's so many curious people. I want to see what my tax dollars is going towards. I'm hung up on tax dollars. Because if I'm going to have to pay tax dollars, I want to know where it's going. And if I don't report on, if I don't follow cases like this, how am I supposed to know what part of this case or any other case like it goes towards my tax dollars? And I just feel like that the media has the right to do what they have to do. I mean, this is what the public asks us to do, and then when we do it, they ridicule us for it. So, I mean, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
Amen. TJ, what are your thoughts?
First of all, Jan, we're having a tea party coming up on July 4th, and your feelings down here in Ocala, Florida, we've been happy. Earl Grey for the old man. You don't mind.
Count us in.
Well, as far as you know, Jan hit it on the head. The media is being consumed by the public. Now, the same people who are saying good, bad, bad, good are people who are also consuming it. And this is the marketplace of ideas. And if your idea or if what you're bringing to the table is not popular or not sitting well with people, they'll refuse to consume it. And once it's no longer consumed, well, it's really not an issue. So the media is a good whipping boy because when it's not saying or reinforcing to a listener or a viewer or a blogger what they already believe to be true, then by golly, their appliance is broken. They need a new one. And then,
right.
Then they'll go to another media source that lines up more closely to their worldview or their set of beliefs. And the media is very convenient to be a whipping boy for the simple fact that if the people who are trying to control public opinion, meaning an attorney or a prosecutor or something like that, is failing to do so, well, it can't be his or her fault. It's got to be that damn media.
The damn media. We have a couple of callers on the line. Let's see if we can get to them because we're running out of time quickly here. Area code 309, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. 309, are you there? 309 has left us.
Central Illinois, I believe.
Hello, 111, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Hello? Well, I'm not sure what happened. They showed that they're on, but apparently they're not. And before we sign off tonight, I want to make sure, Simon, that we give you a chance to talk about your upcoming show on Sunday, because you are going to have a very interesting show, I believe, and we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. So, listening to Jan's answer about the media and the reportage, when George and Cindy, for example, go on the morning shows on network TV and give their side or their version of events, we could almost say, can the state get a fair trial then? I mean, you can almost reverse that and ask with the spin they're putting out to influence the jury pool, you could wonder if the prosecution can get a fair shake. Is that an unreasonable statement, or is that?
No, I believe that's true, because they go out and badmouth the prosecution as much as they claim the media badmouths them. I mean, they really do say a lot of bad things against the prosecution. So I believe that's very true.
Interesting. Anybody else have a thought on that, Simon? Do you think it works both ways if people want to criticize and
about the spin? Of course it works. Of course it works both ways. the Anthonys are involved in this wonderful PR job. They go from morning show to morning show, and it's always going to be the big one. We're going to tell it the way it is, and what actually happens? Daughter didn't do it. Oh, she's a nice girl. It was Annie the nanny. I mean, there's so much doggy-do involved with the whole story. I mean, I'll just shut up now.
Now, these calls still show on my switchboard. I'm going to try one more time. Is there a caller from 309 with us?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, 309, go ahead.
What I wanted to say was, I would hate to think about this country if we didn't have freedom of the press and the courts were transparent. What kind of things would people be getting away with then? I think that the people that don't want to have the freedom of the press covering these cases, are the people that don't, for some reason, want the information about a particular case to get out, be it the Anthonys or be it the friends of the Markoff guy. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, good points. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
And we'll try our luck with the 111. Are you on the air with us? 111, you there? Okay, that one apparently didn't come through. And we seem to have lost TJ.
Oh,
I don't know what happened there. TJ, you with us? Okay, he must have got cut off somehow. Simon, we're down to our last minute or so. Would you want to tell us about what you've got planned for this coming Sunday?
Yes, indeed. We're going to be running another in our regular series, The News in Review, and we're going to be focusing in on the Haley Cummings and Casey Anthony cases. And we have some really, really fun guests. Should be a great show. TJ will be on from Sky 97.3. And we're also going to be having Cobra Straubs, the guy that TJ was talking about earlier on in your show. So it should be quite the event, and that's going to be Sunday at 3 p.m. Central.
Great, so Cobra himself is going to be there.
Indeed, apparently.
Well.
I never believe anything until it actually happens.
Well, listen, we're down to our last 15 seconds. I want to thank TJ. I don't know just what happened, if I cut him off by accident or if he somehow got cut off otherwise. And Simon and Jan, thank you very much for being on the show tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And of course, you're going to be on the show as well.
Yes. Live from Sin City.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, thanks a million. I really appreciate it. You've
thank
been
you,
very
Jackie.
Good guests.
Good night, everybody.
Good night now. Bye-bye. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next show on May 5th, when my guest will be Mark Class from the Class Kids Foundation. Thank you and good night.